Welcome to Automated Mobility, the people behind the wheel. In this podcast series, we get to know the experts working in the field of automated mobility. What drives them, and how do they think their work contributes to a better mobility system? I am your host, Henriette Cornet, and I am the coordinator of SHO, a European project testing automated vehicles in real life. SHO is led by UITP, the International Association of Public Transport. Together with 70 other partners, we investigate a future where mobility is shared, connected, and automated. Today's episode, William Levasseur from Beti. On a side note, this will be my last episode as a host of this podcast series, as I am starting a new professional chapter soon. Follow me online to ensure that we stay in touch, and thank you so much for faithfully listening to the series. But without further ado, enjoy the episode. Hi, William. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Henriette. I'm very happy to be here and share this discussion with you.
So it has been a long break since the last episode, and in the time being. So the last episode was in January, and a lot of things have happened this year. Some disruptive events, for example, in Europe with the bankruptcy of Navya. Also in US with Cruise, there have been a lot of things happening, but also some very, very positive and nice developments, for example, in cities like Oslo, like Hamburg, and where we can see a very nice collaboration. And I really hope we can come back to all of that and that the listeners can hear more about this very eventful year. But first, let's talk about you. Thanks again for joining us. So your name is William Levasseur. You are deputy CEO at Beti, a French operator specialized in automated shuttles, if I'm correct, active mostly in the area around Lyon. But since they hire you, I suppose that they want to expand their business outside of the region and even outside of France. So please tell us more about Beti. Who is Beti? What are you doing there?
Yeah, so first, Beti is part of a group, Bertolami. Bertolami is a family business run by the third generation. It's a mobility operator specialized in low-density era around Lyon. Beti, inside that group, has a mission to fight mobility white zones. Our mission is really to develop territories by bringing innovative mobility solutions. Mm-hmm. Among them, of course, automated vehicles.
So with white zones, you mean areas where there is no
public transportation, mm-hmm, and no solutions out of taking your personal car.
Your own car. So very, yeah, big car dependency in this area, in these areas.
Very and big. And we are here to provide alternative solutions and shared mobility in those zones.
Mm-hmm, I see. And more about the services provided by Beti.
Yeah.
We will come back later to really the different topics. For example, supervision. It's a huge topic right now. And I really want to dig into detail into that with you. But mm-hmm, maybe more about the different services or even the planning. Why they hired you and what do they expect?
Yeah.
Having you on board
So we are fighting for those white zones and bring mobility solutions. We do that to develop territories. Really, there's a strong DNA inside Beti and Bertolami, a strong connection with territories, and we are here to help them grow and develop with mobility. And we are doing that. Our value inside Beti is really to connect the vehicle technology providers on one side and the local territories on the other side. It's a complete two different ecosystem, two different approach, two different thinking. And we are the link between those two ecosystems. That's really our main added value. And we are doing that with three main businesses. So you may know Beti on its first business. We are providing deployment and operation services to deploy and operate autonomous shuttles. We are expanding to two different businesses because we are a strong vision, and that's how we met with the team, and that's why I joined them. We met on the fact that there is so much more than driving. Mm-hmm. Driving a vehicle is not providing a service, and we are here to complete that vehicle technology to serve the territories.
I think so, we really need to come back on that.
This yeah, we
difference
will.
Between the vehicle and the service, it's we'll at the core of...
It is really the DNA of mm-hmm. what we do. So the first business is to provide services to deploy and operate. The second one will be to develop with an ecosystem of partners a platform to hypervise the service.
Hypervise.
Yeah. Because we're all talking about teleoperation, supervision, fleet management, etc. We want to take a step back and explain exactly on the operator point of view what needs to be done to manage our two commitments, that are the quality of service and the security of the passengers. And that is much more than driving and much more than dispatching mission or teleoperation. So we're trying to take a new vocabulary to take a step mm-hmm. back from what exists and what you can hear in all of the media.
Yeah, yeah. So, there's a lot of confusions with all the terms.
A lot.
Of, yeah, as you say, so yeah, teleoperation.
That's why I'm trying to take a new vocabulary mm-hmm. To talk about that.
Let's define these terms.
Develop and mm-hmm. provide a software, really a platform that connects all of the functionalities that you need to have to manage your service. And third business, we have consulting services to advise our clients, our territories, for innovative solutions that they need to develop.
Thanks.
So three different.
Yeah, it's very clear, and I think throughout the discussion now we will tackle some of these aspects again, and I really want to. But coming back to you, so you know the title of the podcast of the entire podcast series is The People Behind the Wheel. Mm. So I really want to get to know the person better and what are the motivation to work in the field and so on. So I check a bit your background online, and I could find that you have this very interesting path of having worked long time for the automotive industry, but also for public transport. So can you tell us a bit more about your path? What was your motivation to be first in the? So there is this transportation is kind of the umbrella of your career so far. What was your motivation and finally, what led you to BT, and what are your hopes? What are your hopes there at BT? Yeah, that's a lot of questions in just one.
a lot, and maybe I'll back to a long time ago. So since I can remember, I've always wanted to work in the automotive or transportation industry. I was in an automotive family, and as long as I can remember, I wanted to be an engineer in the automotive space. After a few years, I wanted, to take a step back and have more of the service approach than only the technology approach. So I spent a few years in Stellantis and Renault, and then I joined Transdev when they started to tackle the autonomous mobility questions. What should an operator do? How we can position operators compared to the technology providers, all of this question. And I discovered all of these public transportation sectors, and it's fascinating. And so because you have this technology approach, you need to understand it, you need to be connected to it, but you also need on the other side to be connected to the clients, the territories, and the passengers. So having both of these service and technology aspect is very fascinating to me, and that's why I'm trying to keep on that field. Also, and that's why I'm still here, is because we are living with a revolutions. We can see it in all of the mobility space. You have e-scooters, you have bikes, you have autonomous mobility, everything, and everything is changing. And I'm really convinced that the mobility in 10 years will be a lot different from what I knew 10 years back.
Yeah,
and that's fascinating to live.
Yeah, that's really something we address more and more at UATP.
Yeah.
We have new divisions, new committees coming on this on-demand, on the shared mobility area, combined mobility areas. This exists for a long time. And I have the impression in what you say that's also the way you picture the mobility of the future, like a combination of many means of transport to address different needs, different transportation needs. Okay, so
there is no one mode of transport mm-hmm. that is perfect and that can address everyone and every use cases. So we need to develop a lot of solutions and address all the needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of exciting. So looking forward to follow you more and see what you will develop and deploy at Beti. Still in the kind of the introduction part before diving in our topic of this hypervision that you mentioned before, I would like to come back on, you know, I introduced this episode mentioning the different things that happened this year. I'm thinking particularly of all the what Navia has experienced, but also Cruise, what you have heard from here, from Europe, for the development. And the positive aspects of these new collaborations happening at different locations in Europe. What are your views on that? How did you, so the, also because we are in December, so the end of the year is approaching, if we do like a, we look back, what's your impression about what happened and how do you think Beti will position itself in all this field?
I have seen two really good things happening this year, where I see the automated vehicles maturing in terms of safety. We can still see companies showing demonstration, but more and more they are maturing on the safety case, on their approach, and more also coming to the operation. And that's where I get really interested. We are not only developing vehicles to drive from A to B. And you know, that's my fight for a few years now. And we are seeing those companies getting interested in how do we operate on the field? How do we deploy and operate daily those services? And so we're seeing that they need to develop much more than just driving. And it brings, and I'm convinced that it will bring, a lot of partnerships and collaboration to bring real services, not demonstration, but services. So I see so consolidation of the industry and going on that field, maybe stronger safety case among the industry, and a focus on this operation side, maybe because of the Cruise stories, bringing a lot of media attention on how do they operate. Okay, there's the safety of the driving of the software, but you can see really a focus and all of the debate about teleoperation supervision, how do they manage, control the service, and how do they teleoperate. So there's strong debate on that, and I think it's really interesting to deep dive on that and be really transparent and explain how it works, because we are not trying, at least we are not wanting to have just vehicles driving from A to B. That's the most difficult part of the industry. And I'm a huge fan of these technology providers. But what we need is to provide our clients services. And for that, we need to do much more than driving. And when you're looking in a network today, even with driven buses, drivers are doing much more than driving. They are informing passengers. They are controlling. They are reassuring people. They are regulating the service. And when you have the driver are doing that, when you have only a small amount of vehicles, but when you have dozens of vehicles, you always have a control center to do that. When you have
already in place, right?
Yeah, already for decades now, when you have dozens of buses or when you have tramways of metros, you have control centers that are taking care of passengers, of the regulation, and taking care of all the field incidents that may happen on the field. So we need to be able to manage that when we introduce automated vehicles in the networks.
Yeah, I really like that you mentioned that, because it may seem sometimes, and I guess that's what Cruise and Waymo wanted to do, is really to start from scratch and do everything by themselves. I mean, they have collaboration inside their company, of course, but I really like this idea of taking already experts from the field, experts like PTO, like public transport operators, who know already how to deploy fleets of manually driven fleets, and after incrementally moving towards more and more automation. And I think that's something that could make maybe also a very strong case for Europe in particular, where...
Yeah, public transportation is maybe more present and important in Europe. So I think that could be a lot of collaboration that's raised in Europe on public transportation with automated vehicle providers. Because again, they are experts and they know how to make a car drive from A to B. But then we have to again, provide a service and operate. And it's okay if we need people to operate the service. It's okay to have people in control centers to manage the service. We're not trying to have our vehicles drive just magically, you know, and anytime, anywhere. They communicate sometimes with KPIs, you know, we need some intervention just one time every year, 10,000 kilometers, yeah, et cetera. But they are trying to have the minimum human in the loop. I think we should really embrace the need of human in the loop. Because today we have, even with automated metro, it's really safe. It's really automated. Still, we have people in the loop. And it's okay for acceptance. People accept and they, you can see how crowded they are every day. So we have human in the loop. So we should take that and use it. And as you say, maybe through partnerships between operators and tech providers to really see how to scale that technology on the field.
Yeah. I think we also need to come back to this human aspect, because it's, there is this, yeah, maybe misunderstanding that we will cancel all jobs. You have heard that many times, I'm sure. And that will be like we will be in a world just with robots and machines and so on. And actually, that's not at all what we were doing all these years. And we saw that the human will still play such an important role. So when we go through the different steps that Betty is building now for this hypervision, maybe we can really emphasize the role of the human at each step. Before, so I'm really teasing so much now. Before going to that, I have another question, and it's important because this podcast is funded under the umbrella of the Show Project, which you joined. So we were super happy when Betty joined Show. Not from the beginning, but you came a bit later with a very interesting use case of being on a peri-urban rural area. Can you say a few words about the deployment within Show and use the vehicles, the type of vehicles you have, the type of route, what is unique to the site, so that people like the listeners now can know a bit with the context how Betty is deploying in the project.
Yeah. The unique aspect of this site among the project is, as you say, low density era, and so we have people, habitants that have no transportation available on the site to go and buy medicines or anything, or go to bookstores, or they have no solution except to take their cars. And we have populations, sometimes they just cannot drive. So they are in really difficult situation and isolated, and we're, you know, trying to develop solutions, an inclusive solution to bring solutions so they can move, they can meet other people, they can, you know, meet friends, go to shops, and live like everyone.
To the society, like everybody.
Exactly, and connect them with the city. So really develop the ecosystem. So that's the really unique points. About the deployment, as you say, this year we faced the bankruptcy of Navya, which was the partner inside that project. We are rebuilding the project with the new company. So there has been a long delay, as you may imagine. With all the new
Gamma, right?
Gamma now, with French and Japanese people on the board, so trying to reconnect everything and restart the project. So it's maybe on the road when the podcast will air, but today it's not yet. But we are ready to restart it as soon as we can, and to go further. So we have this project with them, but we also, you know, to connect with this project and to connect with what happened to Navya, we are working on other projects with other players, because we cannot, you know, depend on one provider. So we're working and assessing all the providers.
We said the shuttle providers,
exactly. The technology provider shuttles, or, you know, driving technology. As we said, this year they consolidated their safety cases. I think there's really improvement this year on that. But we are trying, you know, to sort them, to assess them, and to select with who we will deploy operations.
And you can foresee a bit like a larger manufacturing of such platform. I'm asking because I know from other projects, and we faced the issue in show as well, to find vehicles. It's not easy actually to find these shuttles, as they were in very small series and not really like from the shelf, so to say. And do you see that this will change soon? I have my own ideas because I did also this benchmark that you mentioned. I was also active into that, looking. But can you share a bit your hopes on the different platforms that will come, and when you think there will be larger fleets of shuttles available on the market in Europe, particularly?
Yeah, I don't expect to have large fleets in the next coming 1, 2, 3 years. Clearly,
with large fleets, you mean like above
dozens of. Because,
okay.
But the industry is really moving forward. Yeah, today it was mainly, you know, prototypes showing and demonstrating the technology, the ability to drive from A to B. To scale, they need first to validate the safety case, and some of them have moved really strongly on that point. But then when you have a safety case, you need to produce the vehicles, you need to validate it, and you need to also think of every operational stuff, meaning, okay, it can work for 1 month, 2 months, but then you have to take care of all the little details you see in the operation. That's why it's really important to have demonstration and projects now to see all of these little things, the scratch you can have on the LiDARs, the scratch you can have on the bumpers that can affect the position of the LiDARs, the rain, and all of these things that will affect the performances of the technology that they need to tackle before we can buy fleets and serve large services.
Exactly. That's what I noticed also from the project. A strength of this type of project is there was really this feedback to the shuttle manufacturers about the needs from an operation point of view, and dialogue between also the cities, public transport authorities, operators, shuttle manufacturers. I really like this idea that they could learn also from this type of deployments and improve their vehicles more and more towards more maturity for the market.
Yeah, and I think that's why they are all trying to drive on the road before they can scale, because you learn, you always learn when you're on the road, and that's why they start with easier use cases or easier cities to learn and to gain step by step a new use cases.
Yeah, but from the platforms, it's not you mentioned. I really like that you emphasize the service in front of the vehicle, but still. We need a vehicle. Do you have particular expectation in terms of vehicles, in terms of size, in terms of for the special use case of the rural areas? So what can we have in mind when you think of these services?
Well, in the coming years, there's really the question of what can we have from the industry, and then what do we need ideally in the
tell us ideally.
Ideally. Ideally, we'd like to have a little bigger vehicles. You know, we don't necessarily need the 12-meter buses right now. It will be needed, but I know there is technical difficulties and the, you know, on-the-shelf components that exist for passenger vehicles cannot be used on heavier vehicles. So that's why we have smaller shuttles right now. So maybe like minibuses will be perfect to serve our use
cases. Also because the demand is lower, right? I mean, you will not have a constant mass mass transport.
Today, when you have a large demand and really dense demand, it's efficient to have a driver. We can address a service. But when you have lower demand, it's not efficient to put a driver for 10, 15, 20, 25 people. It's not. And most of the time, you don't have a public service, and then you take your car.
Yep.
So that's why we're trying to have an efficient solution, public transport solution, for that cases where you have between 10 and 30 people that need to move. So
yeah, I remember a discussion with other public transport operators, saying that they are mandated to do like demand responsive transport to unique individual. Kind of, it's their right to have access to public transport, and they were explaining that the cost were incredible, was extremely heavy on them. And I've seen that also in the show project, by the way, that operators, like local, more like the really mm-hmm. local operators, were saying they want to start with these use cases of demand responsive transport, where usually someone calls the day before, say tomorrow I need a vehicle at this time, a bit like a kind of a taxi private service, that are extremely heavy on the cost. And for that, they say that super entry for automated vehicles. I don't think it applies for everybody because some users will have still a need for human assistance, and we don't want to remove the human touch for people with very, very specific needs. But I think like what I could see from some needs, from some demand that an automated vehicles could really do, and through automation, it could get cheaper for the operators and then have more frequency and so on.
Yeah. And when you get more frequency, you get a better quality of service.
Yeah.
And when you get a better quality of service, you get more users.
Yes, exactly.
So we need to, start the chain with a lower cost to really get that better quality of service.
Yeah, this kind of virtuous circle.
Exactly.
And I think that's where the impact of the positive impact on the environment will be, mostly because we are in a lot of discussions about the environmental impact of automated mobility. For me, the positive impact is if we manage to generate a modal shift from private cars to shared mobility, there that's really where the emissions...
That's really what's at stake. Yeah. And again, I think the self-driving technology is a really... It's a game changer, because gaining 20% on the cost of operation is incredible for an operator. It's really incredible.
Is it what the estimations that you have?
It really depends, and it will depend on the provider of technology, on the cost, on the time. Of course, today it's not that. Today it's really more expensive, but it's what we hope for the next coming years when we start to scale. If you get 20% of improvement on the cost of operation, then you can really think of new services and of providing that better frequencies and quality of service.
Reaching to areas that were not covered before.
That's exactly the point, to integrate that technology inside public transportation to improve it and get people to use public transportation and not their cars. Mm-hmm. But again, we need to improve the service before they can be convinced.
Yeah, exactly. This is a real benefit of all. Good, good. I think we have completely set the scene now. So I would really like to understand more about this hypervision that you mentioned before. So what do you mean by that? And the exchange we had when we prepared this episode, I understood that you have kind of stepwise approach, looking at more and more kind of automation, but on the hypervision side, and on the same side you address kind of the diverse roles that an operator have today. So it's kind of a matrix, if I may say. So I would also put information in the description of this episode where the listeners can have a look at what we are talking about. But can you tell us more? Can you speak about these roles that are essential and these gradually increase toward more hypervision, I suppose. I let you really free to start. It's a lot of content in what you have worked on. So where would you start?
What's the role of an operator? The role of an operator is really to, he's responsible of two things, the quality of service and the security of its passengers. And that's really important, because when you move from driven vehicles to self-driving vehicles, you are no longer in charge of driving, but still, you are still responsible of the quality of service and security of the passengers. So how do we as operators keep this responsibility and the burden with it, okay? And the contract, and with the penalties, the financial impact of this responsibility, with no control on the driving, because that's it. The operators, they don't control, they don't know exactly how the AD works today. So how do we keep managing the quality of service and security of the passengers without drivers? That's one point. The second one would be, how do we replace everything that the drivers can do besides driving? Because they are doing a lot of things on the field that self-driven vehicles are not replacing. than replacing the driving. That is the most difficult part to replace, but we still need to replace the other parts. So
what, which would be, for example?
For example, managing the security inside the vehicles, checking that there is no fight, there is no fire, checking that the passengers cannot, you know, fall inside the vehicle, cannot fall outside the vehicle. If vehicles are blocked on the road, that no one is getting out of the vehicle on the road, that is dangerous. And that when you take the metro, when the metro is blocked in a tunnel, you always hear the directly control center or the driver saying, please
do not try to open the doors.
The metro is blocked. Please do not open the doors and stay in the metro till we can resume the service. Taking the safety analysis on the operational approach make you think of a lot of new hazardous situation that you need to mitigate. And when you try to mitigate all that events, again, you don't only rely on the vehicle technology, you can rely on the system. So the system, how you design the system, system meaning the vehicle plus the control centers, and how you use that system. That's the role of an operator. Technology provider provides tech and the operator uses the tech to provide a service. And so, and again, that's not new. That's how all the mobility, operating mobility works for decades. If you look in the railway industry or the aeronautic industry, you have the design of the system, you have the operational procedures because you can mitigate some of the events by procedures. And then you have all the continuous improvement in culture, the safety culture of the organization. And you can only address all of the events tackling these three different mitigation pillars at the safety mitigation.
So you
So
you have this. So you mentioned a lot about the roles, and I think it's clear. It's really clear now for everybody that it's not. It's really not driving, but there is this service in the most important, so to say. And so, what about this? Gradually, like are we going, so to say, towards
what do we need to tackle all this service aspect
and the vision, so to say, like to
The vision. Yeah. So maybe we can divide what we need in an hypervision software or hypervision control center. First we need to manage the fleet. The most common talked about is the dispatch when you have on-demand service. But if you have fixed line, a complex algorithm for dispatch is quite useless because you know the timetables in advance and you only need to regulate the service. So the first pass will be this sort of fleet management where you send missions and you monitor your quality of service KPIs, because when you deliver service, you have KPIs on your contract about
set by the authority, correct?
Exactly, set by the PTA, the authority, where you have commitments and contractual commitments on availability, on punctuality, etc. So you need to monitor that to react quickly and avoid big penalties at the end. So fleet management first. Then you have maybe a second aspect around all of this fleet field event that we talked. So it's, you can put into that all of the system monitoring, meaning you need to get the operator the alert if anything on the vehicle is going wrong. If you have something
unexpected events,
even a failure on the system, even if the vehicle is safe operational and have this MRM by itself, you need to be aware of it to take care of your passengers. Okay, so you need to have this monitoring on the system and alert to the control centers. You need to be able to log data and record data on everything that happened if you have events. So you need to be able to come back to that and analyze the situation to improve.
So that's the role of the operator to collect
the data. That's the role of the supervision to, you know, not to build the data, but to be able to look at it to justify its service. And then if you move more mature on this field event management, you have all of this connection with the local ecosystem. As we said, you need to be able to be connected with emergency forces, with local public works, with weather.
How do you connect with emergency services?
Well, today control centers are already connected just with your phone. Okay, they have direct access to the phone to these guys because they are local, and that's the role of the operator. they are already connected.
The bus driver has a direct connection.
The control center, they have a special phone for the firefighters. They have a special phone for every emergency situation. That's something they are used to deal with. It's not, as you can imagine, when you say connected, it's the vehicle is automatically connected and there is something beeping on each and every firefighter in the city. No, that's not it. Okay, it's not digitalized, but still it works today. Okay, it works with hundreds of buses in the city, so it should work with dozens of automated vehicles. So connected with them, again, to react quickly, but also to anticipate. When you get more mature, and that's, in my point of view, that's really necessary and crucial if you want to operate a public service with the required quality of service needed, you need to anticipate field events. For example, we talked about riots or floods or anything that can happen on the city. The vehicles will be safe, so they will avoid collisions. But still, if they stop just in front of the people,
angry people,
that's it. So there will not be collisions. Okay, but still, they will be angry and puts all your passengers at risk. So you need to anticipate that and send the vehicles, changing the mission, to stop in the station before or reroute to another route. Okay, that is not rocket science, but you need to anticipate those fields.
To prepare for it,
really out of the vehicle sight. You can have the best technology in the world. The vehicle just cannot see it. It's in the next streets. Okay, so you need to be connected to anticipate that. And again, that happens quite a lot. You know, it's not dozens of times a day, but it happens, really. So anticipate field events, that's really important for me. And maybe the third family of functionalities you need in that hypervision center would be to take care of your passengers. And maybe the last functionality, maybe the most talked about these days, would be everything that you put under the teleoperation umbrella. We've seen it a lot. And with the development of automated vehicles, you add the dispatch first because you need to send the vehicle from A to B. You need to tell the vehicle what is B. And then you add the teleoperation because when the vehicle is, the technology is blocked, you need to deblock it to prove a minimum of availability. I think on that part, so you have a lot of solution in the industry. And again, there are lots of people talking about that, so we won't deep dive on it. But I think the operators will come to specify what they want for the security. And that's what they do for railway industry. They should need to be able to at least stop the vehicle if they need to. In the last case, maybe the vehicle are safe, but if you know something is happening on the field, you need to be able to stop your fleet. If one vehicle is having an accident, maybe you don't want the other ones to have exactly the same. So you maybe want to be able to stop the cars.
Or reduce the speed.
Or reduce the speed. Yeah.
Could be also something.
Yeah.
But now I have to ask, and we need to address the topic of actual remote driving that is also addressed a lot. I've heard it mostly on the research side, and I think it's completely legitimate that academia researchers look at it, at pushing a bit the technologies as far as possible. But the discussions I had so far with operators showed that it's not really wished by operators to have this this remote driving. So the way, for people who are not very familiar to it, it will be the idea of having a driving wheel on this control center that the person in the control center could suddenly see through the cameras of the vehicle and drive the vehicle around from a distance. So it looks a bit like a video game if you look from the control center side, but you are moving an actual vehicle on the road with all the challenges that exist. So I've seen that. I know that some deployments are investigating this more and more. What's your view on that? And how do you, how do you see this remote driving with the limitations and the challenges that are included in it?
First, I also see that on the market. First, and I hear it's working. So maybe that's an
opportunity. It's a future. I hear sometimes like, oh, of course, later it will be like that. And
yeah,
we should clarify this.
First, I hear it works. And that's an opportunity to say, and you know, I'm really fighting against that. There's a huge difference between I saw that it works and it is safe and we can commercialize it. That's really a huge step between these two. On the theoretical level, as operators, we just want a solution that is safe. If the safety case is perfectly proven, I'm not opposed to any solutions. But on this one particularly, very conservative on that, because I don't really like the split of responsibility between the driving system provider and the operator. When you say, well, when we say we operate automated vehicles, we said we are not in charge of driving. So the provider should be in charge of driving and responsible for its technology. If you're starting to split responsibilities, it's not clear, and I like what is safe and clear.
Where the roles are defined
very
and so on.
Well defined.
And I've heard also the topic of remote driving. I've heard also the idea of you will need super, super good connectivity, because what you see on the screen needs to be exactly what's happening. Mm. And if you have 1 second of difference, it can be fatal. It could be really tragical, so to say. And as well as a topic that comes often is a topic of cybersecurity.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as you start trying to drive, you need to be real time. And we've seen for a long time now that driving, even in your car, is really difficult. Driving is in distance will be same difficult, but you get the latency, network, and cybersecurity issues. So it's very, very tough, I think. That's why we're not operating any solution like that.
And not even for the future. So it's kind of a case, because of this responsibility that you mentioned before.
Yeah, it's not something, we want, clearly. Yeah. Mm. I never say never, but clearly that's not something we want. But on the delay operations side, you can imagine other other solutions, and there is other solutions on the market, and that are more, I don't know how to say, maybe smart or safe, where the vehicle remains responsible for the driving and its perception, but you have the ability in the control centers maybe to remove a little constraint or validate a pass that the vehicle is calculating, but maybe not sure. So you can just validate.
So it will be.
Hypothesis.
So concretely, it will be you have a fleet of vehicles, and an operator will receive sometimes notifications, so to say, that something is happening on one vehicle, and he will have to look at the situation and be able to quickly assess the situation and support the vehicle in its decision.
Exactly, support it. So you need to have a view on the vehicle. You need to have a control of the latency, clearly, but you're not driving. What I mean is it's very important for me that the vehicle keeps its perception. And even if you validate, so the vehicle restarts on the pass it chooses, if he sees an obstacle that you couldn't have seen remotely, it must be able to stop by itself.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's why I talk about responsibility. For me, the vehicle should keep its driving roles. You can help him remotely, and there are solutions. I don't know how Waymo and Cruise teleoperation works. Maybe that's like this, and that may be wise. In France, I think EasyMile and DriveU solutions are on this path.
So again, I would like to come back on this level. So you are defining, by Betty, kind of a incremental level of increasing level of hypervision from no hypervision to a light one, partial, intelligent, full, and after the topic of even artificial intelligence that is coming into the game. Can you also explain this kind of increase
So we took this need of having an hypervision control centers, and we took this 4 big families of functionalities we need. Again, the fleet management, the field event management, the passenger, and the support driving. So these 4 families, and we try to see from a first service where you have a safety driver on board. Clearly, you don't need every functionality we talked about. Clearly, you don't, and you don't have today in the pilots we operate with shuttles and with safety driver on board. You just need maybe to send a mission, a point B, and you need to log some data to improve the system, and you know that's it. Then to run services on private site, you know, limited vehicle speed, closed site, so limited use cases. If you operate without safety driver on board, obviously you need a safe vehicles, but you also need some functionalities inside your hypervision. Maybe not all the functionalities, but clearly you need to be able to talk to the passengers. You need to be able to manage the fleet in terms of service, really sending missions and managing the stop, etc. So all the communication with the passengers, you need to have everything. You need to have all the alerts, the system, the monitoring of the system and the alerts coming to the operators and sending procedures to the operators or the field operator, the guy on the field.
We haven't mentioned so much the field operator. What would be his role? His role in this in the deployment?
His role will be to.
He's for her role,
of course.
By the way,
would be to, for example, to prepare the fleet in the morning, to get all the vehicle at the evening, to charge the vehicle, and to get in the vehicle if something happened, and if the control center tells him there's something to do, you need to get on the vehicle and take the situation in charge. So you need to be there.
So when we speak, so I've heard many times the idea of having one person in the control center supervising something like five vehicles, or let it be between three and five, something like that at the moment, like as a working area. How many people do you need on the field to operate how many vehicles? You know, how do you dimension that? Do you have experience? Does BT has already experience in that? And
it's really difficult to give you an a range per number of vehicles. Really depend on the site, on the size of the site, because at the end it comes to how quick the response should be and how quick we can respond to the situation. So it really depends on the size and on the number of vehicles. And again, for the moment, we experience quite small fleets in small sites. So for the moment,
there's no huge need from
the one
huge
is enough
team.
For now, but it will come with scale. But clearly, you need, and again, that's an opportunity to say, yes, we have human in the loop. You need people in the field. You need people in the control center to improvise the service. And that's important, and that's okay. And that's okay. Clearly, as we said, even with one operator per six vehicle, you start to have a business case. You start in the public transportation. We are replacing drivers, and we already have people around to operate and to manage the service. So it's okay not to have magic vehicles driving and charging themselves and do everything and maintain.
So it's not
themselves.
Only a shift. So it's not like that you will need more people in the background that you have today. So you see that you will really have kind of a gain, so in benefit.
Yeah,
like
because at the
cost
end,
efficiency.
At the end, is just trying to take the total TCO, the total cost of operation, and trying to reduce it. So you're trying to reduce the total amount of people you need. But it's, as you said, it's a shift in the work. You have less drivers, but more people in the background. And then what matters is the total cost. But if the total cost is lower and you have more people in the control centers and more people on the field, it's just okay for us. It's okay.
It's a money, it's a big picture, so you need to see.
Exactly. And again, another opportunity to say, take an operational approach, not a vehicle, because if you take only one vehicle and trying to make one vehicle drive safely, okay, no, it's not efficient because you're replacing one driver with one people outside of the vehicle. But if you take an operation with
the
lots of vehicles
and
a fleet, it can perfectly be efficient and scalable with only a few people outside of the vehicle.
And what will be then when it grows and when it matures and so on? So AI will play a bigger and bigger role?
Of course it will. So first, maybe we took the first level with operation with someone on board, then the levels with private site, you know, closed site and limited vehicle speed. Then you get in what we define the level for of supervision when you go on open road with public services. And there you need to get the full functionalities about anticipating field events. You need to be able to detect things in the vehicle. For example, if there is fights, if there is fire inside the vehicle, you need to know it to act and to respond to these dangerous things. Of course, AI will play a role, maybe first in the detection of events inside the cabin. Today, and that's why you don't have a lot of security in the driven vehicles. It's not always because the driver can do everything. Sometimes we're trying to put CCTV in the driven fleets. But today you need to watch the image just to get advantage of it. And it's just not possible. It's not efficient because you need one people to watch every vehicle. It's not possible. So here, AI will play a crucial role to detect what happened. And so you can reduce the number of people by detecting everything that happened. So a crucial role here on that. And also on all the alerts, you will get a lot of data from the vehicle. I'm not saying we need the data from the AD system. We don't need that. We don't need what the vehicle is seeing through the LiDARs. We don't care as operators, but we need to have the crucial data from the global system. And here we may need some AI to, you know, to sort it and to improve the alerts and the cognitive aspect of the operators.
I can see that. And coming back to what happened within the vehicle, we have actually in the show project on some sites and some partners working on like kind of image recognition, machine learning systems that can detect. And I wanted to give this example of if someone forgot a bag, for example, in the vehicle, or if there is a suspect behavior like a fight. And this already there is some systems existing to do that, to avoid what you say, that someone is watching constantly what's happening inside. So
yeah, that's a big issue that you have in public transportation that you don't necessarily have in a taxi, because you know you're alone in your taxi. In public transportation, you need to take care of it. And if you are taking the metro on a daily basis, you know that forgotten baggage is a nightmare.
It blocks really everything. Yeah.
And you can take like 2-3 hours, just complete stop of the service, just because someone forgot one bag. Yeah. It's really a nightmare at a service perspective. And again, the operator is responsible for its
service. Exactly the role.
So you can imagine when you need to stop your service for 3 hours, it's really something we need to avoid. And again, today, if you need to put one guy for every vehicle you have on the road, it's not possible. So, but again, here, the AI will play a crucial role to deploy and scale those solutions to be able to detect that and improve quality of service.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think
so that's crucial in automated vehicles because you have no one on board, but I think it can play also a really improvement in driven vehicles. Mm-hmm. And I really think we will see more and more technology like that, even in driven vehicles.
Yeah, I really like from the approach that you have in general is that anyway, and this is valid also when we work on, for example, improving the infrastructure and so on, that we are not tailoring anything special for EVs, but we are trying to leveraging on general improvements that can help other transport systems, that can help the manually driven ones, automated one, like seeing things as a whole,
as a
system. I really like this approach, and not because these very customized system are a bit scary for cities in terms of investment. And it leads me as well to the topic of we are reaching towards the end of the episode, and one last question I had regard to was about the infrastructure that is needed to deploy these fleets in terms of physical or digital infrastructure. I've heard a lot about the need for ITS, for all the traffic lights should be all connected to the vehicles and et cetera, et cetera. But it generates from the discussion I had with cities a lot of kind of anxiety towards investment because you will need so much investment, and because the technologies that will deploy will get obsolete, or maybe from some vehicle manufacturers will say, no, we cannot communicate with this one, et cetera, et cetera. So I see kind of a need for harmonization and agreement that we put as much responsibility as possible on the vehicles. And I would really like to hear your view on that, if you share this view. And in the fleets, either with the experience that you had in the past or your hopes and your visions for the next, for the coming deployment. What is your need in terms of needs in terms of physical and digital infrastructure? What would be kind of the minimum a city should have so that you can say, okay, now it's safe to operate for us, safe or other criteria, whatever. If it's making your life easier, if you have this type of infrastructure put in place.
To be safe to deploy, again, a strong safety case and software solution for the operator and the city to manage the service.
Mm-hmm. When I hear is also so that they talk to each other, so that there is kind of a digital connection.
That's really important. And you know, partnerships and discussion and is really important for me. I think no players can solve the service at scale alone. Mm-hmm. We need to work together. We need to partner, again, because local territories and global software providers have really different approach, different knowledge. No one is better than the other. It's different, and we need both to deploy services. So in terms of infrastructure, first, the digital software to improvise, to manage the service is really important for the operator to be able to take his responsibility and for the city to monitor the service, the data, and everything that happened on his field, because he's the one paying for the service at the end. In terms of pure infrastructure, I see you mean like traffic lights or perception on the road. Yeah. I don't know what will happen in the future, but my current point of view, at least, is that it's difficult enough to build a perception and a safe perception inside the vehicle. So if you deport it outside of the vehicle on the road, it's even more difficult. And you put a condition for all the big players that have put billions on their system to scale. If they need to change all the traffic lights to scale their technology, I think they would have stopped years before now to put such amount of money in the technology. So I'm sure they are convinced and they have the proof that they can scale without that kind of technology.
Yeah, I think that's very encouraging for the city, so that they know that that's not something they should be scared of, so to say, that the digitalization of their infrastructure per se. Yeah. But a question about HD map, is it something Betty is looking at? Because in some of the deployments that I've heard, there is this, and projects, by the way, like European-funded projects, they want to create kind of a system where HD map could be really shared between the cities, the vehicle providers, and so on. But when I ask the industry say, no, we will develop our own HD map. We don't want to rely on HD map from others. So where is a PTO like Betty? Where do you situate yourself? Are you out of the discussion of this HD map aspect? Or do you foresee also kind of a trend that will come out from who will be the owner and who will rebuild them and so on?
Maybe first to finish on the infrastructure, I said I don't see any infrastructure playing a role on the first deployment and scale of the AD technologies. But there can be a place to improve the quality of service. For example, you can have infrastructure to, limited cases and some cases, for example, to send additional information to the vehicle. Again, if it's not safe, it cannot make the vehicle go faster or anything. But you can imagine sending additional information so the vehicle can slow down and anticipate its behavior to avoid future emergency brakes.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe to improve the quality of service, maybe we'll see in the future infrastructure. But again, for the safety case and the scale, I don't see this industry
more needed, like as an optimization.
More than in a second step. For the HD map, we are not in this discussion. And what I see is more the tech players building their own map. Because in the short term, at least, it depends on the technology and all the players have different technologies and different way of building their maps, different information in their map. Because all the players I've worked with, they don't have exactly the same map and the same data in their map. At least a few years ahead, I don't see any agnostic map coming.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
This map, this HD map, wherever the discussion is going, it will not influence the hypervision or the way you operate vehicles. It's really on the side, like if it goes on the side of the vehicles, it's like they're driving for their driving capabilities.
Yeah, for the moment, it's really on the driving part, but it can contain some information that are the fruit of the discussion between the technology provider and the operator. For example, you're going in front of a school. Okay, the operator knows the field, so we say, okay, at this place in your map, you will never drive as your ability mm-hmm. allows you to drive. Yeah. You will go slowly on this part. Okay, so we can have insights or inputs mm-hmm. to the map, but again, it's through discussion with the technology providers.
Yeah. I see. Is there anything else you would like to add on the hypervision or any also what I like asking the question at the end of each episode, something you would like to share from Betty, what Betty has some plans for the future, what the listeners should check and learn more about your plans? And
so, of course, if you are interested in all of these system approach and complementary aspects between the technology providers and the local aspect, really contact us and we'll build together a fantastic platform for hypervising solution. Again, we're not developing everything. A lot exists in the field. We're trying to gather an ecosystem to provide solutions to be able to scale L4 vehicles when they will be ready. So I'm waiting for that and I'm hoping we'll have a stronger technology partners and providers for that. And again, maybe one thing to remember is our approach, taking the prism of the operation, not the vehicle. And I think that's really important, to take this different angle on safety and on quality of service.
Okay, I think the message is sent and I hope you'll get a lot of contact. I wish you all the best in this big challenge ahead, and I hope the message will be really transmitted regarding this supervision, which I think is central for the future operation of automated vehicles. So we keep in touch definitely, and and good luck with all your deployments. Thank you, William.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Automating Mobility, the people behind the wheel. This podcast would not have been possible without the support from the Horizon 2020 program by the European Commission under the grant agreement number 875530. Check out the links for the show project and other references in the description of the episode and subscribe to our newsletter to stay tuned. Don't hesitate to share this episode or give us feedback to it. My name is Henriette Cornet from UITP, and I hope to see you at our next episode.